Great to have you with us here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. You know, an increasing number of Wisconsin residents, many of them older, risk losing their homes because of unpaid property taxes. And that's the worry of our first guest today, Jennifer Fasula. Jennifer's the executive director of Wisconsin Foundation for Rural Housing, based in Oregon, Wisconsin. The foundation provides low-income families with financial assistance for home repairs, covering rent, paying property taxes, and a whole lot more. And I don't think they're well enough known, to be perfectly honest, and probably Jennifer may agree or may not. But as we move along, I hope you'll join in with your own questions. What questions do you have about those property tax bills and trying to pay them? Our effective property tax rate puts us in the top 10% in the states in the nation. So it's pretty high. Give a call, the number 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Jennifer Fasula, welcome. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here to talk about property taxes.
Yeah, and some other things, too. You're part of the Foundation for Rural Housing. Give us the background on that foundation.
Sure. So the Foundation for Rural Housing was actually established by the rural co-ops about 52 or 53 years ago. They wrote a grant. I think it's kind of interesting because the electric co-ops are obviously energy-based, but the cool thing about co-ops, I feel, is the rural connection they have in Wisconsin. They really do know their customers, and I always tell the story about growing up in Adams County, and I had Adams Columbia Electric Co-op, had the horses next to them. I took my driving test out of their building. My parents used to go pay their bill in person, buy appliances. We had a theater in there, and so it was a different time, obviously. But they really do know their members, and they pay attention to communities. So when they created our organization, they were talking about stray voltage for farmers and the water, sewer, septic stuff. So our agency has evolved over the years. And I would say now, in the last probably 10 years, it's really been focused around stabilizing housing for households across the state. Again, we have programming that does kind of specifically dictate the money stays in so many counties. But, you know, we try to always look at what we can do for the full state, not just, you know, Dane or Milwaukee or, you know, try to really put an emphasis on the rural area as well.
So I'm thinking the funding, where all does the funding come from for this?
Yeah, so we get state money. Mostly, it's passed through from feds to state. So we get critical assistance, which is GPR dollars. That is what provides the direct assistance for our housing services in 69 of 72 counties. So Dane, Milwaukee, Racine are not part of that pot of money.
Yeah.
And then we get the CSBG dollars, which is the community support dollars. That's kind of general dollars. We can use it for admin, kind of balances out our critical assistance dollars. Then, like most little nonprofits, because we are still very small, we are writing for grants, WIDA grants for home repairs, veterans, Home Depot grants, Bader Foundation for property tax liens, Universal Service Fund, public service for delinquent cell phone bills. So we're always trying to just identify what the greater needs are that maybe other agencies aren't able to address. And that's where the diaper program came in for us as well, just identifying diapers in rural Wisconsin are challenging for families to get because of grocery store deserts, no big box stores to buy stuff from.
We should talk about that for a minute because I like the name. It's a cool name, the Rubber Ducky Diaper Depot.
Yes.
And that, you know, it's an important thing. We can smile about it, but it's an important thing.
It is. And what we found when we first launched it with private dollars, there was many partners that signed up that said, we'll get them out the door. They weren't even really looking for administrative dollars. They were looking for the product, which is really cool. So we're able to drop ship pallets of diapers across the state of Wisconsin, address some tribal gaps, some African-American gaps, and really look at the full state with that program. And then we received a federal grant to facilitate the balance of that. And again, our electric co-ops, I will say, partner with us because they have big garages. so they can just take the diapers, and then our nonprofits go there and pick up when they can.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool thing. I can remember covering back all the way back to the 70s, the REC, with many of the issues that you've talked about today. Well, here we are. Property taxes are surging, and, you know, mine went up 18% last year. And the property values are increasing, and I guess that's, if I wanted to sell a house or if anybody else wanted to sell their home, that's probably good news. But increasing property assessments and taxes really hurt people who want to continue living in their homes.
Yeah, we've been providing property tax assistance, I would say, probably last 15 years. When I came in 2018, I just sort of started digging into property tax concerns because it started coming up a lot more with our request for assistance. That and home repairs for aging home stock, right? We know our housing stock is aging. And I remember it used to be where your property tax bill, you'd say fair market value is, easy math, $100,000, right? But when you'd go to sell it, you'd obviously sell it for more than the fair market value. Now, what we see in our property tax bills is the fair market value is pretty darn close to where it's going to sell at.
Yeah.
And so the assessed value obviously would increase the tax value.
Yeah, it's usually based on some, it used to be 80%, but I think it's closer to 95%.
Very much so, yes.
95% now. And and school referendums are a big part of a lot of this. And they have a, I think, disproportionately maybe a burden for older home owners.
Yeah, that is predominantly who we get the calls from, are older people, individuals that are widows, recently widowed. Their house is paid for. And this is always the ironic part of the whole conversation I have with these folks that are potentially going to lose their home to property, unpaid property taxes, is their house has been paid for. You know, they may be in their 80s, 90s, their house has been paid for. But property taxes have creeped up to a point where their Social Security has not kept up. And then if you lose that extra income from your spouse, you know, it's almost impossible for them to get ahead again, which is why we really just need to have a conversation about what is that segment of population in Wisconsin look like? Does it need to be what other states do, assessed value freeze, a credit based on income? You know, other states are doing this. Wisconsin is not even really talking about it yet.
Yeah, but so politically, you'd think that there'd be more discussion of this whole business of providing property tax relief. It doesn't seem to, I mean, that's the general term, but what does it mean sort of when it comes to the politics of everything?
Well, I think, I'm not sure why they're not taking it on as a bigger conversation. I would suspect it comes up plenty in a community setting conversation. It comes up plenty with us. Ever since COVID, I will say there's been even a bigger surge of requests for property tax. Even though we did have Wisconsin Help for Homeowners at that point that paid a lot of folks' property taxes and mortgages up and caught up, we are seeing some repeat folks that are still having problems paying these property taxes. School referendums are a huge part of that, which then links back to the bigger conversation about how do we adequately fund our schools.
Yeah, and right now we're sitting on a big chunk of change in reserve money. But
rebates aren't the way to solve property tax increases, because rebates, just like homestead credit or just like a tax return, you know, intentions are good when, you know, we counsel people on what's your plan. If we can get you caught up, what's your plan going forward? How are you going to budget to pay mortgage, property taxes, take your pick, whatever it is, rent? And they'll say, well, I'm getting a tax return. And we know best laid intentions is, yes, it sounds great. But when you get that money physically in your hand, there's something else that inevitably comes up or that you want to do, and you apply the money that way. Not their fault.
Yeah.
You know,
you mentioned people losing their homes. I mean, how often does that happen? Do people ascribe more to that as a danger then may not be the case? Or
I think when people miss their first property tax payment January 31st, which is the first installment across the state, many people get very get a lot of anxiety because they missed it. And the good news is that's not when the county wants to take your property. As a matter of fact, I mean, I talk to county treasurers a lot. The board of directors for your counties don't want their property. They don't. It's not their goal in life to take everybody's property because it's not favorable, right, in the community. But they legislatively have to address what's going on with the delinquencies. So, you know, they're kind of caught between law and personal heartstrings, you know, so to speak.
Course.
But I would say most of the people we help are on the edge. Like right now, we're processing 2023 and earlier property tax applications. So anybody who's missed 23, 22, 21, so about the oldest I've ever seen, those are the folks we're prioritizing because those are the folks that absolutely will lose their house if something's not put together as a plan.
And there's a plan? Can there be a plan? What are the plans?
There can be a plan. So if they our organization, again, we do $1,500 one time assistance, but that comes with a counseling session. So it's not we're counseling with assistance. We're not just saying we're going to throw the money at it and we're going to let you deal with it. We want to know how did you get there? How are we going to get out of it? If we can pay $1,500 and you owe $3,000, there's still a balance. How are we going to address that? Not all counties standardize their process to collect property tax deferral payments. Some will do a formal payment plan. Some won't. It's just a send what you can. And that's the other thing is people need to know is you can always send money every single month, every week. Doesn't matter. They will take your money and apply it. But once you start missing those property tax payments, you know, we're at 1% guaranteed interest. And if they add the extra percentage, it could be 18% each year. Is what they're putting on your property tax bill. And that's interest. That's not penalties.
That's.
And so can you go to the bank, right? Logically think, can I go to the bank and get a home equity line of credit? The simple answer would be, sure, at 6 or 7% still is a good deal. But banks don't always look favorably when people are behind on property taxes. And the reality is most people's credit at that point aren't all that great. And so even though the bank can secure a pretty nice, you know, asset writing that loan, more often than not, the banks will not take that gamble and they won't write the loan.
I was thinking about I was working a while back, helping a person with the finances, with her finances, and she had like three credit cards. And there wasn't a huge amount of money on the cards, but she was only paying the minimums. And I looked at the interest was 30%. I couldn't believe it.
Well, that's nothing compared to payday loans, right?
Well,
those are 200-300%.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
We did some work with micro lending to try to pay those off to get them down so they could pay them off quicker. And yeah, we were amazed at what we saw in the documents for the interest rates.
Wow. Jennifer Fasula, our guest today. She's executive director of Wisconsin's Foundation for Rural Housing. It's based in Oregon, and they're providing low-income families with assistance for finances, for home repairs, covering rent, a whole lot of things. And I hope you'll join in with your own experiences, maybe your thoughts on the property taxes or other things as well. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you with us here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jennifer Fasula, Executive Director of Wisconsin Foundation for Rural Housing. Questions, again, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234 or email us to talk@WPR.org. Are there a lot of people out there that are behind on their bills and you're trying to help them out?
I worked with the Wisconsin Help for Homeowners program when that launched in 2020, and we had many, many, many people behind on property taxes. That program has since ran out of money. And so pretty much we're the only agency that can work with them. And we just reopened our program, and I think I had 20 property tax applications within a couple, 2 to 3 days. And not all of those were 23 and behind. The reality of it is some of them are only 24s or maybe even only 25 behinds, which there's way more hope for people who are only a couple of years behind versus 4 years behind.
And how, what kinds, what's the financial, how do people apply? What are the steps for it? And what kind of help can you actually give?
Yeah, so if they go to our website and they just Google Foundation for Rural Housing, there's a tab that says housing. Everything we have is automated, so they can do it from their phone or from our website, or if they need an accommodation for a paper app, like some of our senior citizens don't have computers, aren't very techie, then they can just email us, or there's an online chat feature. They can just say, I need a paper app. We need their address. Phone in, say, I need a paper app. We can do an app over the phone even. So once they process the application, it's pretty generic. It's household information, some basic demographics. We try not to make a lot of hurdles for people to apply. A basic budget, verification of income, because, again, it is a state-funded program, so we do need source documents of income. Depending upon how far behind they are, I'll usually get on the phone with them because it's something I'm more passionate about in the agency. And we'll have a conversation about, again, how are we going to get ahead? What's your plan? Why did you get where you got? The other thing is there are agencies that have like pots of property tax money across the state, but they don't list it necessarily because they don't have enough. So if you have $40,000, if you started like advertising that, that money can go very quickly. So a lot of us also have some money that's set aside for more complex cases like we do, where we can actually put a lien on the property if the house is paid in full to catch them up so they don't lose their home. But sustainability is always the goal. It's how do we keep them in their home and how do they stay caught up? So we maybe have 7 properties that we have a lien on, 0%, just sits there until they sell it. But that was the only way for these folks to keep their home. And these are senior citizens. My oldest is 98 in Rice Lake.
Could you imagine evicting a 98-year-old?
No, I can't. And it was a $7,000 tax bill. So she didn't have seven, and she was too proud to ask her family for it. So, you know, those are the folks we're working with usually.
I wanted to, there are credits. There's some help out there for people. Like, I'm thinking the homestead tax credit. That's a little bit of money that helps out. There's income limits to that, I think.
There is income limits. And again, the problem with the homestead credit, and I think they might have renamed that in the last budget cycle, I can't remember, is it's not dollar for dollar relief. It's a percentage based on a percentage of what they pay. And it's a check, basically, that comes to them, you know, in May, not to be applied to property taxes necessarily. It's just it's a check they get. They can do what they want with it. It can go to property taxes if they want, or they can cash it and just use it for whatever else they need. And the other reality is home repairs, right? So aging housing stock, water heater breaks, you know, window upgrades. And sometimes delinquent property taxes can even prevent them from getting access to some of those other programs like the weatherization program. And so property taxes, for some people, can limit their access to energy improvements and things they might need in their home.
I got an email from Joe in Medford. Actually, he called, couldn't stay with us, but wondered, he heard you say that Dane, Racine, and Milwaukee counties did not get federal funding to offset tax relief programs. Wondering why that is for those counties.
So the Dane, Milwaukee, and Racine, those are counties that are one of our money sources through Department of Administration, say we can't provide assistance in. But that doesn't mean there aren't programs in those counties. So Milwaukee has Take Root Milwaukee. Because Milwaukee is so large, and that demographic is so big, they have their own organization. So anybody in Milwaukee should call Take Root Milwaukee. Dane County, again, population-based, they have their own sources of money. So, for our program, it's focused on more rural Wisconsin. Yeah. But the tax programs that are out there, they're across the board.
Yeah.
They're not dictated by county residency.
Yeah. Matt in Marquette has something. Let's go there. Hi, Matt.
Hello there.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to get your thoughts on the effects of school vouchers and the impact that has on the property tax situation, because essentially what's happening is it's competition between parochial schools and public schools, and the money follows the student, and it seems to me that that's a big part of our problem.
Yeah, Matt, so the school voucher, so if we just go back to the basic problem, I believe, in the state, is adequate funding for our public schools, right? We clearly don't have it, and that's why schools are having to do referendums. And I don't know what your tax bill looks like, but how many referendums you have for your schools. But, you know, one of my largest ones I have, which is in Hudson, has 5 stacked school referendums on it. And the oldest one will not drop off until 2043. So I'm sure vouchers play into that. I honestly don't know the answer to that. But what we need to do is talk about why are public schools not adequately funded in our state? Go back to that basic concept with your legislators and try to talk about options. Can we freeze referendums? Can we have a moratorium on referendums now? Because, again, these are on there for many, many, many years.
So those were the 5 that were passed.
Yeah.
But they're all stacked on top of each other.
They are. And different years they fall off. And the reality of it is the ones that may fall off in 27 may get renewed and put back on. If the general public votes for them, and that's being educated about what's going on in your ballot.
There's one other thing that we haven't addressed that I did want to address for rural areas, and that I was reading some information on homelessness in rural areas, which was, that was the saddest read that I've had in a while. How big a problem is it?
So I think it depends where in Wisconsin you're at, where the rural part of Wisconsin is. So if every year our homelessness organizations do what's called a pit count, it's a point in time count where they go out between like 11 o'clock and 6 a.m., a bunch of volunteers, and they just look, they stop at playgrounds, they stop at schools, they stop at parks, and they try to evaluate what the true number is of homelessness. Now, remember, couch surfing isn't really considered homeless, which is odd, right? Because they are homeless. But it's not allowed to be counted like a person you see living in their car in the park. So I don't know, is it a problem? Yes, in some areas way more than others.
Lisa in Madison has something for us. Lisa, hi.
Hi. First of all, congratulations on your retirement, Larry.
Oh, thanks, Lisa.
And my friend Kelly and I did go and see you at the Orpheum, so that was a great show. It was awesome. So
thank you.
Terrific. And we had our pictures taken with you. But at any rate, I have a question. I'm just wondering, like, for some of these people, and I know she had said that some of them have, like, a poor credit score or low credit score, but why don't some of the people try to do, like, a reverse mortgage to help pay for the property tax?
Yeah.
That is an excellent question. My very first answer is going to be there are very few good banks that we would trust to refer them to do a reverse mortgage. And everybody's seen maybe Tom Selleck, if they have regular TV, advertising reverse mortgages. They're not as easy as what they make them out to be because they're diving into their equity to live at their property. So I think there could be a lot more conversation around reverse mortgages. I'm not certified to like counsel on reverse mortgages, but there are people that are in the state of Wisconsin. And those folks should absolutely talk to a counselor before they go to a bank. Because there still are requirements where they have to maintain property taxes, but they get to live off of the equity in the house. For some people, it's a great, great, great option. The question is why can't banks be a little bit more flexible with their underwriting when they have, an asset like a house that's completely paid for? to give them the home equity line of credit, because the reality is 7% home equity line of credit versus 18% on a property tax delinquency, they can get ahead much, much, much quicker if the banks would loosen some of their underwriting requirements.
Oh, and the underwriting requirements that are the biggest problem are?
It's usually the credit score. And sometimes it's debt to income. So they may have too much credit card debt. You know, there are several reasons why the banks would underwrite and deny. But, you know, maybe there's a pilot program out there that would look at something different for these folks.
Is there another way for older homeowners to maybe delay paying their property taxes until they sell their home?
Reverse mortgage is one of the only ways that they can use their equity to stay in their home without, they still have to pay the property taxes. That's the reality of it. Even if you have a land contract, you know, all those sources of how you buy a home have to still pay the property taxes. It's just part of owning a home in our state. And it also makes, you know, buying a home pretty challenging for first-time home buyers, because now that property tax bill is so high. And people who have bought their home in maybe the first 2 to 3 years and the property taxes go up because of school referendum or a reassessment, and now they're escrowing their property taxes, right, in their mortgage payment. And so they're wondering why their payment went up $200. Well, simple math, because they didn't collect enough for property taxes last year, and now they think your property taxes are going to go up to that the following year. And so they'll get a double whammy as a new homeowner, and their mortgage payments will go up. And we get calls about that quite a bit as well.
I'm wondering about, I want to go back to the rural areas in terms of homes and finding homes for people. One of the problems I think I read about was, I mean, there aren't a lot of homes available. What is being done to try and improve that situation?
So there's been a little bit more focus on manufactured housing development in the state than probably ever before, where, you know, there are companies that are, you know, advertising the manufactured home, 2-bedroom, 1-bath, or 3-bedroom, 2-bath for like $150,000, which seems affordable. But then you have to figure out, does it go in a lot, you know, some sort of manufactured housing lot where you're paying lot rent, or are you putting it on land, which then you have the well and septic. So, you know, is it more affordable than buying a brand new house? Absolutely. But there are dynamics to that. USDA rural development just in the last like few years have allowed you to actually finance a manufactured housing on rural property, which in before it used to be, you know, stick built. So I think there's a little bit more emphasis on that manufactured housing development, which is a little bit more, it is more affordable.
Yeah, I was wondering about like multi-building projects, anything like that going on in the state, in the counties, that rural counties?
Not that I'm aware of. Not for purchase. You know, apartments, yes, but not purchase.
But not purchase.
I mean, you know, duplexes, the normal, zero lot lines, duplexes.
Oh, man.
Tiny homes.
I'm hearing the problems and we're talking about them and we're having... I want some more solutions to these darn things is what, and it's frustrating sometimes when it comes down to maybe one or two things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, developers are trying to build new housing, but new housing isn't always affordable. And again, property taxes play into that development very much so. So if your property taxes are, your assessed value of your home is going up and referendums are going on it, you know, to buy a new home, they have to factor in that property tax payment, which could be an extra an extra $500 a month on top of the high interest rates. So, you know, the conversation about how do we produce more housing, how do we get people into new housing, and how do people give up their older homes so that people can buy at a baseline entry-level house and not the $500,000 entry house, you know, it's... And then there's a job market, right? That's the reality of it, too, is where are they going to go to find stable employment, if they're raising a family, what schools do they want to be in.
Yeah. Jennifer Vasula, our guest today, it's great talking with her today. She's executive director of Wisconsin Foundation for Rural Housing. Questions for her, comments, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email to talk at WPR.org. Let's take a call from Kathleen in Madison. Kathleen, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. We certainly enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I'm calling. My husband and I have moved from California to Madison. We've been here a couple of years now, and we're both retired. We own a home, and we live on retirement income. And we wish that Madison, that Wisconsin would find a different way to tax, find money for schools, which we support. Besides taxing old people who own their homes, if they could, in California, where we're from, they have something called Prop 13, where they do not raise property taxes. And if they do, it's only no more than 2% if they have to. It's a proposition that voters passed some years ago.
Yeah, that's a great point. Wisconsin hasn't had a very robust conversation about options for folks living here. Like, what can we do? We haven't even really had a conversation talking about some options and maybe looking at what the other states like California or Illinois or Florida or whatever, you know, those states are doing. And they're all across the board. They're all very unique models. I think there's maybe 12 states that offer some sort of property tax relief in some way, shape, or form. Now, Wisconsin does do the veterans, right? The 100% service-connected veterans get the property tax credit, but it's a credit. It doesn't mean they don't pay them. They have to pay them and then file the return to get the credit. But, yeah, Wisconsin is not doing a good job at listening to folks who are struggling or that see the property tax values continue to go up and addressing that in a real great way.
So talk about some of the successes that you have had with the program over time when it comes to housing. And
yeah, I would say if we can't help them, we try to find, like we talk about the reverse mortgage, or we try to reach out to the banks or the lenders that we work with that maybe would take a fighting chance on it. But the folks that we're able to help with the $1,500 one-time assistance, it usually will get them caught up to like 23 or 24, okay? It doesn't get them all the way caught up because most people by that point have way too much they owe. So, but what we do is we're stabilizing their housing. So their tax lien that maybe they had in September, the county was going to go to the county board to talk about taking the property, auctioning it off. And we can usually stop that. That's where we try to get in, is we try to stop the progression of them losing the house. And then we talk about the payment plan. And we try to follow them a couple, 2-3 months after we help them. The other cases where we had to do the lien, I talked about that lien program. That's Bader Foundation money. And that is where people are going to lose their house. Like, and the counties are requiring all years be caught up. So the stipulation on that is the house has to be paid for. We have to do a house inspection. And then we pay the entire property bill, catch them all up, and then we follow them forever, you know, just to make sure that they're making their tax payments going forward. Because, again, if they're going to lose the property, we sort of want to know that so we can jump in and see if there's another program out there for them that they could use to access it. All of my cases with liens are still fine. They paid their property taxes going forward. They may have been a little bit behind, but not to the point where they're going to lose their property again. So we know that a little bit of money goes a long way for folks that get behind, and it's just a circumstance that got them behind.
Well, all you have to do is get sick and miss work for a month.
Or car repair.
Or the car breaks down.
And or a well or septic.
You guys do some work with septic too, haven't
so
you?
So we have in the past. We don't have any funding to do that right now.
Oh.
In rural Wisconsin, we would refer them to USDA and then banks to do that.
So USDA might have some funding available?
They would have funding if they're in the rural development area, you know, where they're able to fund.
Reggie in Bangor, let's go to you. Thank you for calling.
Yes, this is Reggie here. Your guest was talking about, and you probably asked about manufactured homes. Mm-hmm. Habitat for Humanity of the Greater La Crosse Area, the director was on a radio program. It might have been on WIZM Radio here in La Crosse.
Yeah.
And she was talking about some projects, I believe Hudson and possibly Eau Claire. I can't remember for sure the cities. But it could be closer. I might be getting mixed up because it might be within the counties, you know, that they cover.
Yeah.
The state, and they talk. It could be like these homes, well, like have Kickapoo homes where they have half of it on a trailer and then they put them together. But it's not the typical trailer houses from the 60s or whenever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's trailer houses.
So these are manufactured homes that are built by Habitat for Humanity you're talking about there, Reggie, aren't you?
Well, I think some might be made in a factory and then...
And put together, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Reggie, thanks for calling. Comment on that, Jennifer.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's a lot more thought process around manufactured housing, just the single wides or the double wides, where they're building it, the factory coming in and putting it together on the property. And the Energy Star ratings for those homes have... Now they're meeting the Energy Star guidelines,
yeah.
Where before, obviously,
they weren't.
So they're made a lot better than what they've ever been made. And the cost is less than a stick built, for sure. There's a lot more thought that goes into those. Again, like we talked about, is it going to be on a piece of property? Is it going to be in a mobile home park? Because the mobile home park has their own rent. So you might be paying $400 for lot rent just to put it in a mobile home park, plus your mortgage payment. Plus the other expenses that come with it. So it's really what's affordable for the person looking to get housed.
So if the person had their own property, maybe they were left a piece of mm-hmm. land, then, of course, they could put their own home down on that, assuming they met
the zoning
was. But then they'd still have to put in septic and water, of course.
Correct, yeah. Yep. And then, you know, basement. Some people want a basement. You know, some people, that adds the expense to it. Otherwise, they're on slabs.
Yeah, and I can see why people would want a basement sometimes with the kind of weather
right?
we've had with climate change that's going on in many areas. Well, Reggie, thanks for adding that into the conversation. Barry in Oshkosh, what have you got for us?
Well... The discussion you're having about trying to fund public education and our property taxes being what they are, and most of our legislators unwilling to really address the issue, could your guest discuss what some of the best options that are being discussed that are relatively fair to everybody? What are some of the best options?
Some of the best options for reducing property taxes as it relates to school funding.
So I've met with some legislators, and there is no conversation being had about, at least not that I'm aware of or that I see, about how to address this problem in our state. So the starting point is obviously for everybody to become very educated about what their property tax bill looks like and look and see how many referendums are on there. Maybe you're the lucky ones and you don't have any. That would be great. I am collecting property tax bill examples from people that we've helped that I've been able to show to folks about, you know, showing just how many referendums are getting stacked on property tax bills. But it really is going to have to come down to maybe the governor's race and folks talking to the candidates about addressing property taxes in their campaign, but locally, legislatively, talking to their legislators, taking your property tax bill in there. Because I guarantee people don't really understand referendums and they don't really know the stacking piece. They just sort of pay their property tax or their bank pays the property tax bill. But when you really start collecting tax bills around the state and you start to see what I see, which is multiple stacked referendums, especially in the last 2 to 3 years, I think it'll open some of the eyes of our legislators to start having a real conversation.
We look forward to that conversation for sure. Perry in Bayfield, your turn. Hi, Perry.
Hi there. I am on the other side of the coin. I am a property assessor in Bayfield, Ashland, and Iron Counties. I do 20 municipalities. Mm. And it's heartbreaking to watch this situation. And what's happening, the very bottom line is people are moving in from the outside, paying huge prices and literally forcing the locals out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We talked about a little bit before the show about the assessments and the, you know, back in the day, maybe the assessments weren't taking place like they should have, you know, based on what their county required. And now they're very much on top of the assessors coming out and the timelines required. And, you know, you can come off of a referendum vote and then the assessor is coming out to the house within the next couple of months. And I think it's frustrating for property owners to have that happen.
Yeah. And if you've been there forever and the value of those homes come up, keep going up, then suddenly your value of your home is going way up and you're paying a lot more property taxes.
And most people say, well, I'll never get that for my house, right? But the reality of it is
they will.
They probably will.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jennifer Fasulli, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News. We'll be talking about your taxes, your income taxes, in the next hour of the show. Mary Mellum from Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals with us. For now, we're taking a look at property taxes in part with our guest Jennifer Fasulli, who is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Foundation for Rural Housing. She's based in Oregon, Wisconsin. Jeff emailed to say his grandparents bought a lot in Rock Lake in Lake Mills in 1960 for about $2,000. With the help of Jeff's parents, his grandparents did a lot of work to build a house on the lot, which our family enjoyed and maintained for many years. Before Jeff's grandfather died, he warned the kids they would get taxed out of their property. Taxes went up very nominally for 50 years, but in the early 2000s, the taxes jumped exponentially, leading to the land being triple the value of the house. And sure enough, Jeff's working-class family was taxed out of the property. That kind of goes along with what our assessor was talking about earlier. And Theron asked, kind of to go along with this, is there a limit that the state can increase the property tax in a given year? In Trempealeau County, after the COVID housing boom, people saw 15, 20, and even 25% increases in a single year. Spoke with many people on fixed incomes, and it was a struggle.
Yeah, there is no limit. Again, remembering that it's an assessment that helps drive what the property and your mill rate, which helps drive what your property taxes are. And then you get those credits and then you get those referendums. So they you know, maybe your lottery credit washes out a referendum, but it's really the assessed value in the referendums that sort of drive your property tax bill. And the other thing people, again, I know most, they tell people this, but when you have an assessment done, if you don't agree with the numbers, there's an open book requirement. And so you need to walk down or drive down to your assessors to the open book and tell them why their assessed value is incorrect. And again, you can let them in the house. You don't have to let them in the house. That's completely up to you. But if there's something that they're, maybe they say you have an extra room or an extra bedroom or something that's, or a finished basement or unfinished basement. Just know that you should go and contest that. That's your right as a property owner.
Bill in Portage, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, your guest commented on possible solutions to the property tax problem. And one that was not mentioned was to just increase the state's share of school funding. You know, for the last 15 years since the Walker administration, the state has consistently reduced the amount of funding that goes to the public school system. And this has resulted in, you know, the need for local communities to go into referenda. I know that in particular, Kelda Royce, who was a member of the Joint Finance Committee, and I guess a candidate for governor now, has attempted to accomplish that in the legislature's budget committee. And, you know, so far that's been rejected.
Yeah, that's a good point to bring up, Bill. A comment on that, Jennifer?
Well, I think, you know, your listeners are very, very intuitive and understand, I think, what the underlying problem is, which is the public school funding and how do we get them properly funded. And so what do we do about that? It's a bipartisan issue. This really should be addressed on both sides. And the folks, us, who vote, need to be talking to our legislators much, much, much more about this issue and possible solutions. And that is definitely one of them. But why can't it get voted through? You know, it takes the legislator to do this always. So the legislature has to come together and talk about this in a meaningful way, like they do some topics, you know.
Bill, you're right on there. Thank you very much for calling. Karen in Madison, what's on your mind?
Okay, number one, they can't get it through because we don't have campaign finance reform, and the people who go to the offices have to dance with who they brought. But I also want to say about taxes that I support education. I have no children, but I have 32 nieces and nephews all brought up in the city of Madison. Everything is connected to everything else. So when we give money to not public schools, we're taking away from public schools. Also, God forbid, we should tax the rich. $1 million is nothing nowadays. And people. And then I want to say my mom and dad, they paid $5,000 a year for their, my dad was a retired World War II vet, $5,000 a year in taxes. My dad built the home. He was a beautiful builder. And they paid their taxes after my father died. And they lived off of like $1,200 or $1,300 a month in Social Security. And my dad continued to work till he was in his 90s. And he had a family of nine children. Hence the 32 nieces and nephews. In any case, they paid their taxes, and then after my dad died, my mom got a reverse mortgage with the city that was for the taxes, and we said, we don't care. If the whole house is gone, it's for my mom and my dad. They did their job. But the people who have the money are not paying the taxes. And, oh, in Minnesota, they have a thing where they pass that once you hit a certain age in retirement, your taxes freeze.
Freezing taxes.
It's an option. It's an option that should be discussed. Like I said, there's like 12 states that are doing different variations of property tax reform. Freezing the assessed value is one. Based on certain income limit, they get a discount on assessed value. So it's all based on assessed value or freezing it, not so much on the credit side, right? So because, again, a rebate or a credit check isn't the solution. But I think if we can look at some models in other states, and again, the legislature has to be willing to have a conversation about this, and somebody's got to bring it forward to start this conversation.
Yeah, and you guys are not in a position, are you in a position to do that? Probably not.
We are not allowed to lobby. Mm-mm.
So it's up to each of us as individuals to make sure those who are running for office are informed about the situation regarding property taxes and what could be done about it.
It is. And I think, you know, what I can do is present the facts, which is capturing all these property tax bills of people we have helped and get it over to the legislators to see it.
Well, Jennifer, it's been a pleasure talking with you today. Thank you so much for being with us. And I'm down the road. We'll probably be doing this again. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Jennifer Fasula, sorry we didn't get to everybody, but perhaps another time. Jennifer is Executive Director of Wisconsin's Foundation for rural housing based in Oregon. And you might want to go to the foundation because there's a lot of good information at the Foundation for Rural Housing that might be helpful to you and when it comes to resolving those taxes. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you along here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, and it's time to talk about your income taxes. Mary Mellum is back with us. Great to have her back. She is with Ash Wabenin Tax Professionals. She and her husband David have been in the tax business for more than 30 years. They serve individuals, they consult with other tax professionals, and they teach tax seminars around the country. So, as we talk with Mary, I hope you'll join in. What tax questions do you have? Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Mary Mellum, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Thank you. It's nice to be here on this nice sunshiny day.
Yeah, for sure. Well, April 15th, of course, was the deadline to pay your annual income taxes in a lump sum. And if you missed, what happens if you missed?
Well, when the government catches up with you, you'll not only owe what you owe for taxes, but you'll also owe a failure to file penalty, a failure to pay penalty, and interest on the money.
Not a good thing, for sure. But you can have an extended deadline, and I imagine a lot of maybe of your clients might take advantage of the extended deadline of October 15th.
That is true. There are people that are annually extended for different circumstances. Sometimes it's the investment issues, what they're invested in, that they don't get, like partnerships don't get their information to the taxpayer soon enough. Some people decide to be what I call snowbirds and don't come back to the area until the weather is warmer. And so they are not here to file on April 15th. And some people just put it off.
But they're paying. I mean, if you file an extension, you're still going to have to pay the interest on money
yes.
that you should have paid, right?
The secret to filing an extension and not costing you anything else is to make sure that you've paid enough in during the year so that you're in a break-even or a refund situation. If that's the case, you aren't paying any interest or penalties. It's when you owe money that it costs you extra money. If you timely file your extension and you owe money, there is a 0.5% per month that you pay as a failure to pay penalty, and the interest rate, which is, I believe, at 6% currently.
Yeah. Let's talk about estimated taxes payments. What's an estimated tax and who has to pay for it? Let's put it that way.
An estimated tax payment is an amount paid quarterly to, again, put money into your account so that at tax time you've paid what's due. The government wants you to pay ahead. They don't want you to settle up with them on April 15th. So if you don't pay ahead through either withholding or estimated tax payments, there is an underpayment penalty that you pay if you haven't paid on a timely basis. Estimated tax payments are usually made by people who are self-employed. It could be contractors, Schedule C people, or farmers, and people that have investment income or other kinds of income that there isn't a traditional withholding from.
I was thinking about this. I'll tell a story on myself. A couple of years ago, for I don't know what I was doing, but I wound up owing money, and I was fined for not, the percentage of money that I owed was greater. I forget what it was. Anyway, I got a penalty for that. So this last year, I then, because I couldn't figure out what I did wrong, I filed a tax payment, an estimated tax payment that covered the about what I would have we should have done the year before, and then I came out fine.
The government, they recognize the fact that you can't always guess what your liability the next year is going to be. So there is a safety net set up, and it says you can avoid the underpayment penalty if you pay in 100% of the prior year's tax or 90% of your current tax. So protective estimates or a protection is to make sure that you have 100% of last year's tax paid into the government before the due date. And with that being said, you can owe them $1 million and you'll avoid the underpayment penalty.
Yeah. And it's not difficult to do the, pay additional money to the IRS. I looked it up and I followed the simple instructions, and it was relatively easy where I could have it taken right straight out of my checking account.
Traditionally, people have estimated tax vouchers that they pay quarterly payments, April 15th, June 15th, September 15th, and January 15th are your typical estimated tax payment dates. But if you want the convenience, as many people do, of having it withdrawn from your account, you certainly can do that. If you have a tax professional and you set it up when you're filing your taxes, it can be set up automatically through your tax program. If you don't want to do that, maybe you think things will change or you didn't think to do it at that time, the federal government has what's called the direct pay program, which you can go in. You don't even have to have an account set up. You can go through the direct pay. You put in the amount that you want paid. You tell them the bank account you want it to come out. You set a date, and it's very easy to do that.
Yeah, it is indeed. Many callers online with questions, so let's go to the phones. Tim in New Berlin, we'll start with you. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I get all kinds of conflicting information about rebates, about tax credits. I mean, I guess a rebate and a credit is the same thing, but about tax credits for solar panels. Under Biden, the tax legislation, as I understood it, was very generous for solar panel rebates on taxes. But then I also have heard that Trump changed all that. Right now, if you get solar panels put in, what is the policy? Do you know?
For 2026, if you have solar panels put in, there is no credit. At the end of 2025, the energy credits ended.
Yep. So there's nothing there for you, Tim, in terms of credit, energy credits.
The energy credit topic is a good topic to talk about. It's easy to say it's all over, but there are people that are struggling because this year the energy credits came out and there is a Form 5695 that you had to file. And we heard from the onset of it that the government was going to have numbers that you had to put in to ensure that you were really buying the right product. In 2025, the IRS finally got around to finishing that program. And there was a four-digit code. It was called a qualified manufacturer ID number that had to be put into the 5695 form in order for it to go through. If you filed it without the proper form, the IRS is sending out letters and forcing you to respond with that code, and it's tying up refunds. So if anybody is in that situation that they filed without it, make sure you go back to the manufacturer and find that code so that you can get the rest of this year out.
Ah, all right. Very good information. Tim, thanks. Stan in Green Bay, we go to you. Hi, Stan.
Yeah, hi. This is a great topic. Thank you very much, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
I have a quick question and then a quick comment. My question is, you were talking about snowbirds before, not filing on time. If the government owes you money, you don't owe them money, do you care when you file? Is there any penalty for being a year late or not filing at all, as long as you're sure they owe you money?
Well, basically, if you have a refund, you can file beyond the date and you'll get your refund, except if you go past the statute of limitations. And that's for the federal, it's a 3-year statute of limitations. So if you're behind and you file 4 years after, you're out of luck. They don't have to pay you. So you can file late as long as you have a refund coming. Just don't run out of the statute of limitations.
Okay. Stan, thank you for calling. Mark in Wisconsin Dells. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Larry, I've got a situation I've been in to before, but last year I converted a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA, and I paid $20,000 roughly in taxes. Okay. So now this year, they want me to pay another $20,000 in estimated taxes. Is that necessary for me to actually do, since I will not owe those taxes?
No. Your estimate is set up, it should be set up based on what you expect to owe. As I mentioned earlier, we have, there's the 100% paid in of last year's taxes to make sure that you don't owe anything. And sometimes that protective estimate is set up based on the prior years. If you know your income is not going to be that high next year for the next filing season, you set those estimates up according to that. Now, if you underestimate what happens, then you may have some penalty to pay, but it's a question of what works best for you.
Okay. There you go, Mark. Thank you. Catherine in Alexandria, Virginia. Hi, Catherine.
Yes. Hello, and yes, I am a native Badger, though, and proud to be so. And my question actually overlaps, I think, with the last question about estimated taxes, and I so appreciate you both being there. And that is, with my husband retiring next year, and I'm at home now, we've been paying estimated taxes during these high-income years for some time. And so that's what we were wondering is, how do we account for what is going to be a significant drop in income? Will be okay, but there will be a significant drop in income, and how do we account for that? We typically do a TurboTax program in terms of so that we aren't paying the estimated taxes we won't owe.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly how TurboTax works, but I can tell you what we do. When a client comes in and tells us that things are changing for next year, we do a pro forma or a fake return worksheet type to guess where they're going to be based on the best knowledge that we have. And then that will tell us what they would expect to owe in tax, and we set the estimates to cover what they expect to owe. Again, going on the high side, a little bit higher on that is probably a better suggestion. Or realizing that if things don't work out, you may find yourself owing a little bit of money in. And, of course, if you owe less than $1,000, I believe the federal is now, there is no penalty that for that if your payment is not that high to them in the end. But when you change your status, retirement, or whatever the situation is, it's a challenge to get yourself on that right track. And you kind of do the best you can within the guidelines, and hopefully that will work out best for you. But to take a look at what your tax possibility for next year would be is the best way to go.
Yeah. Might be a good year, Catherine, to sit down with a tax person and have them work with you on figuring out what your potential taxes would be for the coming year, and then go from there. It makes sense to me anyway, Mary.
I think that's good advice, Larry. Anytime life changes and you're not exactly sure what the tax situation looks like, it's a good idea to have a second look.
Yeah. Thanks, Catherine. Very much appreciate your call. And you can join in, too. The number to call is 800-642-1234. You can email to talk at WPR.org. Open lines get you on pretty quickly. I'm Larry Mueller with Mary Mellum for WPR News. We are taking a look at your income taxes on the program today. Larry Mueller here with Mary Mellum, tax professional from Green Bay. She and her husband operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. It's great to have her back with us. John in Milwaukee has a question. Let's go there. John, hi.
Hi. Hello. Thank you for accepting my call. Mark, who asked a question about converting to Roth IRAs, I converted to a Roth IRA, and the taxes he paid is on the money that he put into a regular IRA that he would owe if he took that money out. So when he put that money into an IRA, it went in and it was not taxed. So when he converted to a Roth IRA, he had to pay the taxes on the money he put in previously. It has nothing to do with the taxes he owes for this year. If he paid $20,000 on the money he put in the past, he still owes the taxes for this year. It's totally two separate programs.
John, thanks for calling. Mary, is John right on this?
John's the question that Mark asked was not so much a question of the tax difference from last year versus this year. It was the additional tax that he paid on the Roth conversion that he will not owe the following year. So if Mark owed taxes without the conversion, he's still going to owe those taxes this year and have to plan accordingly. But he doesn't have to make his estimates large enough to cover last year's tax when he isn't going to owe that part of it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So John was right in his assessment of what happens when you convert a traditional to a Roth. The traditional IRA goes in as a deductible IRA. There hasn't been tax paid on it unless you have a non-deductible IRA, and that's a whole different question. But if you have not paid taxes on the money you put in or the growth, when you move that into a Roth, which is an account that will go tax-free, your contribution is not deductible. Therefore, the non-taxed money that goes in has to be paid taxes on. And there are good reasons for making Roth conversions, but it is a taxable event when you do it.
Yeah. John, thank you again for calling. April in Fitchburg, it's your turn. Hi, April.
Hi, Larry. I've been seeing this topic come up a bit more, and I wonder if your guest knows anything about war tax resistance. I've seen articles about it, and because I know people have a lot of severe objections to how our federal dollars are, like, being used in our country for, you know, some various reasons, and I wonder if they've heard about that topic or know of any examples.
War tax resistance.
That almost makes me think when you say that about the Tea Party at our country. I'm not familiar with that particular verbiage. But there have been over time examples of times when the government spends on different programs than we agree with. And I guess my answer to that is we all have votes, and we elect the people that vote on those programs, and it's up to us to make sure that we elect the people that represent our views.
So you're going to be taxed on the full amount that you earned. I guess that's what you're saying, Mary.
Yes. I mean, based on the tax code, that's how we pay taxes, not based on how they spend the money.
Yeah.
It's people who are elected to go to Washington that decide how the money is spent, and that, I guess, is the place where I would start if I disagree with how they're spending the money. We can't, whatever is in the tax code is what the basis for coming up with what we owe each year. And being educated in the tax field to know what we can take advantage of and what applies to us to reduce those taxes is my suggestion to work with what we have.
Yeah. Okay. April, thank you very much for calling. By the way, tax refunds, I would expect that by this time the tax refunds should have been received by now from the IRS. Although in past years I can remember delays and you talking about them, Mary.
There are certain times that things get delayed based on a certain topic. And as I mentioned, the energy credits this year, there are returns that are delayed because the IRS is looking at them. And if you happen to be in that situation, for whatever reason, I think the IRS is being a little bit sharper. This is, again, my opinion. I don't have any statistics to base it on. But I've seen the IRS asking questions ahead of time rather than dishing out the money and going back a year or 2 years later and saying, oh, we really didn't agree with what you did. Sometimes that causes us to have to wait for our money. But I think in the end, some of those things help us because the IRS encounters people who file returns that aren't correct. Some of them are accidental. Some of them are intentional. And if they dish out the money, sometimes it's awfully hard to get it back. So sometimes the inconvenience is worth it in the end. The other thing is, if you have to wait for your money, I believe if the IRS goes 45 days after the due date of the return and has not sent the money out, that they will pay interest on that money. So if you're having to wait for your money and you get a little bit extra than you were expecting, it's probably because it fits into the time frame of them having to pay interest on that money.
Got it. Yogesh in Appleton, we'll go to you now. Hi, Yogesh.
Hi, how are you, Larry? Thank you.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Yes. So I have a question. I have my IRA to my work and traditional and Roth, and I recently bought some extra traditional IRA for my wife on my Vanguard account. So, but I already paid money tax on that money, right, from my income. So do I have to still pay tax if I convert to Roth?
Okay. I'm not sure I understand exactly what you're asking. You mentioned that you put money into a Roth or into an IRA for your wife.
A traditional one.
Pardon me?
A traditional one.
A traditional one.
Yes. Because if you did it and got the deduction for it, there isn't money paid on it. If, on the other hand, your income is high enough that you couldn't get a deduction for the traditional IRA, you would have a cost basis in that IRA. We call it a non-deductible IRA. And when you convert, that amount that you already paid taxes on is called the basis in the IRA, and that plays into how much is taxed on the conversion. So it depends on what your situation is. But traditionally, with a traditional IRA, you get a deduction, and that's why when you convert, you have to pay taxes on that deduction that you already got.
Got it. Yogesh, there you go. Thank you so much. Julia in Ogama, your turn. Hi, Julia.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, my son that I did not realize was unhealthy and died a week ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I do not think he was healthy enough to pay to complete his 25 taxes. How do I find that out?
If I'm sorry for your loss, if your son, if you are the power of attorney or the representative, you can contact the IRS, and with that, you have to prove to them that you are the power of attorney, but they can give you a record of the income and issues that he has, the paperwork that they have received. You want an account transcript is what you're asking for. Again, you have to be patient with them because they can't just give it out. They have to make sure that you're the person that has the right to it. But that information is there, and the account transcript will tell the earnings that he has had during 2025. And you can also get a picture of what was paid for.
And, Julia, I'm very sorry for your loss. It's a terrible thing. I lost both of my brothers last year, and so I was filing their taxes this year. And I kind of had to go through what Mary described for at least one of them. So thank you for calling, and again, I'm sorry for your loss. Mary in Onalaska, we turn to you. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a family member who has an IRS status of do not collect, and he has enough money in his retirement to pay off his IRS debt. And so an offer and compromise doesn't seem like it would be a wise choice for him. Do you have any thoughts on his status?
Sounds to me that it's in a program called Currently Uncollectible.
Hey.
Currently Uncollectible means that when they're looking at what's going on, they don't see that there is enough beyond the amounts that they allow you to live on to collect it. If his status changes, for instance, he starts drawing or is required to draw the money out of his IRA, they will look at it and they will say, you have enough to pay X amount of dollars. We want it. So the IRS does a really good job of keeping track of their currently uncollectible status. And if he has the money to pay it, sometimes, depending on the situation, they can require him to take the money out of the account and pay them. So it just depends on the facts and circumstances of the situation. The offer and compromise, obviously, is something that usually if you don't have the money to pay and it looks like you're never going to have the money to pay, that's when the offer and compromises make sense. If there are assets that can be drawn upon, even life insurance policies that have cash value, the IRS can force that situation. So, you know, without knowing all the numbers and things, it depends on what they're seeing on his end and how proactive they are.
Yeah. Mary, there you go. Thank you for calling. Barbara in Kimberly, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I did my taxes for 2025 back in February, and thus far I have not received my federal rebate check, and I've gotten two letters with 60-day, I don't know, they're looking at it. I just looked last night online to see where the rebate was happening, and it just says received, and nothing else has been taken place, and I have stage 4 cancer. When am I going to get my rebate? Is there any rush on it?
Nice. It depends on, first of all, why they're looking at the situation. Unfortunately, there isn't a whole lot that you can do to speed it up. In your situation, there is a form, and I don't know the name of the form offhand. It's called hardship. And if you maybe type into the internet hardship and IRS, it is possible that you may be able to get some action with them by filing a hardship claim. That's the only way that I could think of. And it is certainly something that you have to talk to the IRS about. The IRS does have a taxpayer advocate part, and it's possible that maybe in a situation like this, they could help you with that.
Yeah. I'm sorry for your circumstance, but I, Barbara, but the taxpayer advocate might be of a big help in this circumstance for you. Thank you for calling, and good luck. Mike in Madison, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. That past lady, if she didn't provide them with a account number, she won't get her money. They're not sending checks out anymore. Anyhow, that's not what I called for. Back in 2022, my wife and I had sold a rental property that we had, and I did my own taxes, and I made a mistake. I overpaid quite a bit, actually, and they sent me a refund minus a $1,000 penalty because I didn't pay it quarterly. We sold the property in January, and so all year long I should have been paying quarterly taxes, which I didn't know. And my wife and I sold this on our own, so we weren't working with a realtor, and the title company didn't tell us anything about paying quarterly taxes. So when the time came and all of a sudden we were being penalized. Now, I realized recently that because President Trump declared an emergency with COVID and it wasn't lifted until Biden's administration, that I can ask for that money back. I filed an 843 form, and I'm wondering if there's anything else that I need to do.
Hmm.
I think what you're talking about is a recent court case. I believe it's the Kwan case that came up, and the 843 is how you would secure that interest back. That request is based on a court case, the finding on this court case. So I'm not sure how long they're going to take to satisfy it or if there will be other court cases that challenge it. But I think you've done what you were supposed to do.
All right. Mike, there you go. Thank you.
One thing that he mentioned about the IRS not sending checks. In this situation, in Barbara's situation, I don't think that was the problem. Because if you have a refund coming, Mike was correct that the IRS announced they want everything direct deposited. They announced that they're not cutting checks. That's not exactly true. The IRS, if you have filed a refund, have a refund coming and you did not provide a bank account, information for it to be deposited. They will send you a letter, and that letter will ask you to send them or go online and give them the banking information so that they can do that. If you don't respond to it, they will send you a check, at least for this year. The money's not lost, but it's going to take time.
Got it. And Mike, thanks again. Sharon in Madison, your turn. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Larry. I'm calling because I paid a tax professional to file all the way back to 2021 because I hadn't filed that year. It showed that I had a refund. And at this point, it's been like a year and a half, and it's been, I don't know, 60, 70 hours. And, you know, it was sent by certified mail, but they said they didn't have it. They finally had it. They said, we'll work on it. But I guess I'm just wondering, should I keep trying to get this refund, or should I just give up?
If the return was filed within the statute of limitations for collecting the refund, then keep going. Keep hounding them. I don't know, again, the situation. If you mailed in the returns instead of electronically filed, it's going to take a while. But if you legitimately have that money coming back, keep going and keep asking for it. Hound them until something happens.
Okay. Sharon, there you go. Thank you for calling. Lou Ray in El Dorado. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. I am calling, my husband is always filing our taxes, so I haven't had anything to do with it other than tracking what's happening. And I'm afraid it's been probably 3 years, but we always pay the full amount we're going to owe for the year when he files for an extension. And that year it was $8,000. You know, it's an overpayment, but it was an $8,000 payment. And sometime after that, we got a check from IRS for $8,000 telling us we didn't owe that money. And they keep sending the check back to us. I mean, they keep... We pay every year. That's the only year that's in question, but it's the $8,000 they're charging us interest and penalty for, and they've had the money all the time. And they've sent it back 3 times now, and it's like we're trying to get them to reckon that we did indeed pay that money, and we don't owe interest and a penalty for it, but they just aren't getting it.
Hmm.
My suggestion, if you haven't, is to try to work with someone. What happens sometimes at the IRS, when you send a check in and maybe didn't put a Social Security number on it, or it got not separated, and they don't know who that check belongs to, or they don't know what time to credit it to, sometimes sorting that out is part of the problem. And certainly if you sent the money in timely and you can prove that you sent it in timely and they sent it back, you may have recourse for asking for the interest and penalty to be waived. You just have to get to talk to someone. And if this is an ongoing problem, you might try taxpayer advocate as well.
Oh, that's another from the IRS, taxpayer advocate. Yeah. So give something to give a try to, Lou Ray. Thank you for calling. Paula in La Crosse, we'll get to you in just a minute. A quick reminder, we're talking with Mary Mellum today of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. I'm Larry Mueller. Taking a look at your income taxes today with Mary Mellum of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. Tomorrow on the show, entomologist P.J. Leash comes by to talk about the world of bugs and then our roundtable of outdoor writers. will also be with us for an hour. So looking forward to that as well. In the meantime, questions, give a call, 800-642-1234. Paula in La Crosse, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to comment. The guest was just speaking of getting a paper check for the federal refund, and this just happened with my dad, and here is the kicker to it. He's almost 96, does not have internet, does not have an email, and when you go on that IRS website to be able to put in then your bank account number, of course, you have to have an email address. So I just wanted to comment that for a lot of our very old senior citizens, and I did finally get the contact number. It's tricky to find it on the website where you can actually speak to somebody in person. But she did issue, after that deadline of the form that was sent where you have 45 days, my dad was issued a check. But with the understanding that there will be no exceptions next year and that you have to tell your tax preparer, I said to my dad, you have to give him your bank account info, Dad. No more checks. So I just wanted to make sure people understood that. It's very tricky with our senior citizens.
Oh, good story, Paula. Comment, Mary?
Well, IRS, I understand the reason for them wanting to do the direct deposit, but we all know it's pretty hard to make that happen totally. And as much as they want it to happen, I'll be surprised if next year there still aren't some checks issued. But they are being serious about saying this is better for us financially to do it this way and safer, you know, getting it to the bank rather than worrying about someone taking it out of your mailbox.
Yeah. Yep. And Cindy in Madison?
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi. Hi. I've been listening, and I have a question about filing online for free, because this is the first year I've used paper because I got tired of paying whatever $50 to file. And I was just listening and hearing that soon it just takes a lot longer if you do it by paper. But is the IRS or the government going to provide a free website like they had for a while that got taken down?
Well, the IRS for a number of years has had a partnership with different tax software companies, and they had a free file program. And it was based on, I believe, income levels and things like that. The IRS did spend an astronomical amount of money to create their own free file program. It lasted probably 3 years between the pilot program and the actual on live program. And because of the cost of it, it went down. So unless the IRS gets lots of money, probably their free file program will not come back. But certainly you can go online, you know, go through the IRS, and there is a filing program if you fit the situation. The state of Wisconsin has a truly free filing program that you can file your Wisconsin return through the Wisconsin website at no cost.
All right, Cindy, there you go. Thank you so much. Nicholas emailed to say he has an almost 16-year-old, started his first job this summer. He's not having state and federal taxes taken out because he doesn't make that much. And Nicholas is wondering, what's the limit that federal and state taxes start to come out?
As far as the withholding limit?
Yeah, I believe that's what he's after.
The way the current W-4 is set up is if you only have one job and you fill out your W-4 in that realm, they will not take taxes out until you exceed the standard deduction for that person. The state is a little less in that light. plus the state has a little less filing requirement. So for someone under 65, for 2025, the magic number was $15,750. So unless that job looked like it was going to make more than the $15,750 on an annual basis, they would not take any money out. Wisconsin's filing requirement is $14,260. So Wisconsin may have taken some out just because they have a little bit less filing requirement.
Okay.
I don't know if that answers your question, but it should give you kind of an idea of how much they're going to make before they need to worry about it. And always ask your employer to take more money out. It's just filling out the right box on the W-4.
Mary, we've been doing this together for a long time, and I understand that you have a question for me today.
Yes. I want to know, what is it that you're going to miss most about the radio show and what you've been doing for all these years?
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot to putting on a show. It's the planning and the researching of topics often, or the reading of books. We do 50 books a year, so there's that. But the best part, I think, is just being on the air. You, with a great guest like you, who many people have told me, they're always amazed at what how much you know. So it's such a pleasure to have people like you as guests, and then have the callers are the sort of the it's me and it's you as a guest and it's the callers. That's the kind of the three-way that we have here for this particular show. And callers really ask good questions. They move the show along. You as the expert and other experts are great at answering those questions, and it. And I'm always happy at the end of a show to know that we've provided a lot of individuals who may be called the answers to their questions, knowing full well that there are many hundreds or thousands of people that may have had the same answer. And as I walk, as I've been around the state talking to, giving talks and talking to people, most of them, when we have our picture taken together or we're just chatting together, tell me something that they learned that made an impact on their life. And so just this being on the air, talking with great guests and hearing from the callers is really what it's been a real pleasure for me.
Well, you've done a lot for a lot of people, and I wish you the best in retirement.
Well, thank you. It's been so much fun. And Mary, will you continue to work with us, with Lee Rayburn, who's going to replace me?
Well, you're a hard act to follow, but I think I can manage that.
Well, you've been a treasure for us, and I want to thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure working with you for these many years, and I'm looking forward to hearing you when Lee calls and when Lee talks with you on the air. Mary Mellum, tax professional from Green Bay, been in the tax business for more than 30 years, and Mary and her husband David operating Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. They're enrolled agents, and she knows a lot about taxes. And it's I can't remember if I ever heard her stumped. I don't think so. For me, it's been a real pleasure here today as well. We've got another show tomorrow. I'll be here tomorrow. I hope you'll be here tomorrow as well, as we talk about bugs and then we take a look at conservation issues with our guests tomorrow. Big thanks for our team. I'm counting down the number of meetings I have left with the team, which is kind of sad in many ways, because it's such a great team. Clara Kniper, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins. Of course, our executive producer is Jill Ledoux. I'm Larry Mueller, and thank you so much for listening. And please stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.